This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Ruby struggled after Frank's death and Douglas's departure. Her effort to buck herself up and carry on was met with complications. At the All Saints Hall, Ruby was sickened by the gossip of a group of war veterans who knew Frank and Douglas, and the snobbishness of the women. "It's all theatre," Madame told her, but when we last saw Ruby, she was looking for a way to escape from everyone.
Vi emerged from the kitchen, fussing with plates of food on the trestle table.
"I'll come with you," said Phil. "Look, sandwiches! And they're pouring tea."
The dark tea had a metallic taste. Still, the cup was something to hold.
"By the way, how did you know Mr. Pierce?"
Phil seemed determined to make conversation. "I hadn't known Frank long, but we became good friends."
"I'm sorry," said Phil. "It must be hard to lose someone you like."
"What about you?" Ruby steered Phil away from the table.
"Oh, my father knew him," Phil said. "That old war thing, you know. I don't know why they keep going on about it. Why can't they leave the whole thing in the past?"
"It doesn't seem to be something they can just wash off, does it?" said Ruby.
"I suppose not," said Phil.
Across the room, the actors and actresses were enjoying themselves.
"This tea is ghastly," said Phil. "I wish there was a shandy handy. Give me that. I'll take it to the kitchen. I ought to go and do my bit in there before I go. Dry sauces or something. I hope I see you around."
The layered petticoats under her gathered skirt swished as she went. A woman fashionably swathed in dark taffeta peeled away from the group of actors, taking a stack of used cups and saucers to the trestle table with the proficiency of a waitress. Behind her, embraces and kisses were exchanged. "I do hope you're there with them, Frank," Ruby whispered. She imagined his laughter in their midst. Was Mrs. Pierce with them too? Or had she been gone too long? There was no escape from the ladies descending on her like hens after a worm.
"We were admiring your hat," said one. "Very la mode."
"Thanks," said Ruby. Smiling was no longer possible.
"Are you a friend of the family?"
clucked the one with a hat that a cat might have slept on.
"One of Mr. Pierce's artistic friends, are you?" said Flowery Hat.
Didn't she know how to steam the silk flowers to freshen them? They looked half dead. Still, it suited the occasion. Who the heck were they? Church ladies, she supposed. Ruby thought about her own church-going mother, whose face used to strain with the effort to hide her disdain, just like the taut smiles in front of her now.
"He was..." Ruby started.
Vi shoved her way forward.
"That's just Mrs. Woods, Frank's housekeeper."
The pursed smiles on the three chooks dropped and they pulled back.
"Oh," The housekeeper.
Cat Hat turned her shoulder away first.
But that hat, said the other.
Ruby put a hand over her mouth. Oh, Frank, an abyss of loneliness yawned open. She plummeted into it.
Ahem, Mrs. Woods.
It was Mr. Peterson.
I don't see Douglas, Mr. Woods, anywhere. Has he slipped out?
I'm not sure, she said.
I see. I had hoped to give him my condolences. How is the young Miss Edith?
Ruby steadied herself. Well enough, thank you. This has been hard on her.
Ah, it's a good thing that children get over these things quicker than the rest of us, he said. You've got a very special girl there. A credit to you, Mrs. Woods.
Ruby, please call me Ruby.
Of course.
He gave a little bow. Mr. Peterson, I know this isn't the time and place, but I wonder, may I have a word, please?
Time for a bit of fresh air, he said. I'll get my coat.
A light drizzle had settled in. Ruby pulled her wrap over her chest as she stepped out onto the path.
I can understand, said Mr. Peterson, that you might be concerned about your position, Mrs. Woods. Only natural.
Ruby pressed her lips together.
We'll send a letter in due course. Let's just say that for the time being, unless Mr. Woods has an objection, I'd be very grateful if you could stay on.
Time being? She didn't want to tell him she had no idea where Douglas was. He cleared his throat.
There are procedures. I can't tell you more. It'll be 3 months at least. If it suits, of course.
But about...
When everything is settled, I'll have a letter drawn up and you'll receive word. Until then...
Ruby nodded. 3 months stretched into the distance. Mr. Peterson. She stepped closer to him, her hand on his sleeve. You knew, didn't you? About Frank? He coughed into his knuckles, glanced over his shoulder.
Frank? The two of them? I've known for years.
Back in Chiponia's MG, Ruby looked across at her boss's ageless, serene face. The soil covering Frank would soon be pocked with raindrops, the flowers people had left soon bruised. If he was still hanging around, he would be off for the night with the theatre crowd by now. Off to a real do, at the Grand. They looked like the sort of people who would go there. She ached, wishing without hope that he would be at the house, invisibly sitting on the porch, waiting for her. But they weren't going back to the house. Chiponia swung the MG into the lane behind Vardo. Edie and Janice waved from the upstairs window. Ruby raised a hand. Go. Give Edith a kiss. Chiponia was madam again now. Then, come back downstairs, to the salon. We will have a little coffee. After that, back to work. Mrs. Pierce's locked door aroused mixed feelings in Ruby. It would be an intrusion. Still, it might be her duty to know what was in there, in case someone asked her to help clear the place out. Frank wouldn't want strangers handling his mother's things, chucking her belongings into boxes with brutish hands. And Vi, It wouldn't do for her to find everything covered with dust. She owed it to Mrs. Pierce. Ruby found the key in a round leather collar box on Frank's dresser. A layer of dust marked the time since he'd died, and Douglas had left the house. Quickly she retreated and closed the door, as though Frank might catch her poking about in his things. There was nothing to stop her opening Mrs. Pierce's door, but she couldn't do it. Every time she reached into her cardigan pocket for a hanky, she fidgeted with the iron key. When she splashed gravy on her cardigan, she hid the key in a drawer while it was washed. At Vardo, the midwinter window display theme was aglow with glamorous new cocktail hats for the town's fashionable evening events. Designs were being prepared for the spring fashion parade in August, and Ruby was grateful to have extra work to take home. Edie seemed to have had a sudden growth spurt, which gave Ruby new distractions, making new clothes, and she used the best lengths of Mrs. Pierce's fabrics to make blouses and jackets for Janice and herself. Since the rainstorms, Janice had taken to staying over. Her sister, having taken up with the butcher who ran her about in his van, had allowed Janice to keep Muriel the Vauxhall for herself.
"Only right, too," Janice said. "I've been the one paying for repairs."
Now and then, when Ruby caught sight of Vi, she had no qualms about snubbing her. August was even colder than July. Janice put her knitting aside and sidled up to Ruby on the couch.
"If you took the other bedroom, I wonder why it's called a master bedroom, the one that's locked. I'd be happy to sleep in your old bed. Unless..."
Ruby gave her a sidelong glance and left the hint of a suggestion hanging in the air. "Darling Janice, one of these days she'd have to be told the truth. Not now. Not now."
"The frame of that army stretcher's been giving me bruises," Janice said.
"You could use the little spare room," offered Ruby. "We can make up the bed."
"That room's cold," Janice said, with an exaggerated shiver. "No wonder it wasn't used."
"I can have the stretcher. Don't you think it's a bit silly, though? The three of us sleeping in the same room as if it's a dormitory?"
"But it is fun, isn't it?"
Janice pouted. The length of Janice's stay hadn't been discussed. Without giving it any thought, Ruby had let her install herself. No, fun wasn't the word. Ruby had pulled her old iron armor around herself. But at night, her recalcitrant blood vessels were aware of Janice's body sleeping a few feet away. Janice carried on knitting with that soft smile as she concentrated on the Fair Isle pattern, and she shifted balls of coloured wool from one side of her knees to the other. If Ruby could feel anything at all, she would love Janice. And there was Edie. The child was the only anchor there was. Janice held the knitting up by the needles.
"How long is Edie from armhole to waist?"
"Didn't you measure her?"
"I did, but I forgot to write it down," said Janice. "Honey, you don't seriously think Douglas will come back, do you?"
There had been no word from Douglas. Ruby's thoughts of him seesawed between anger and pity, swinging on a fulcrum of guilt. "We don't know, do we?"
"He won't, you know. He's a runner. I read about it in a magazine. It's a type."
"Type?" Ruby got up and rattled the fire.
"Hey," said Janice, sitting forward on the edge of her chair with enthusiasm as a new idea took hold. "We should take a squiz at Frank's mother's room." No, I'd rather not, said Ruby. You'll have to go in there at some stage. It must have a proper double bed in it.
Janice gave her coquettish grin and wriggled her shoulders.
It'd be so gorgeous to snuggle in together once in a while. Why don't we? Well, we can.
I haven't been in there yet. I can't explain it, but I feel as though I'd be intruding. Besides, she knew the astonishing whiteness of Janice's thighs, her tissue-fine skin, the dip of her waist when she lay on her side, the electricity that pulled at her whenever Janice was near. Still, Rosalind Pierce might not mind. Besides, Ruby said the word aloud again. Besides, after everything, she did not deserve comfort or pleasure. Besides, she said again. Janice laughed.
Good grief, Ruby. The woman passed away. You're not worried about the room being haunted, are you?
Don't be so silly.
She couldn't say that she was already on speaking terms with the late Mrs. Pierce. Janice took their empty Horlicks mugs to the kitchen.
Best leave things as they are, Ruby said when Janice returned.
There's no point thinking about spreading ourselves out or changing rooms at this stage. Any day now I might get word about the date when we have to leave. At last, Edie and Janice were asleep. Percy had made himself comfortable on Edie's hair. The hot water bottle had been kicked to the floor. On the camp stretcher, Janice lay on her back under a pile of eiderdowns. The door of Rosalind Pierce's boudoir unlocked easily. When Ruby switched on the light, she blinked, dazzled. The room was a wonder of blue. A lot of blue. The wooden bedhead, the footboard, the nightstand, the dresser in front of the blue chenille-draped window, all blue. The wallpaper featured enormous blue roses with pale green leaves. Even the mirrored mantelpiece and the large wardrobe had been painted the same duck egg blue. The double bedspread, in an expensive-looking gold brocade, was an island. The room wasn't as fusty as she had expected. In fact, the room seemed to be holding its breath, waiting. Waiting for Rosalind Pierce? Or for her? Ruby whispered into the emptiness. Hello? A temptation to wake Janice up effervesced in her chest. She folded it down. The sanctuary would be fractured by Janice's frenetic energy, and she'd poke into everything. It had been undisturbed since Mrs. Pierce packed for her train ride north on that tragic Christmas Eve. Even a blue dressing gown that had not been put in her case still lay on the bed where she'd left it. She imagined Mrs. Pierce doing up her room, sleeves rolled above the elbows, ferociously erasing all trace of the feckless Cyril after he ran off with some floozy. The extravagant bedspread must have been the final touch. Is that what you did, Mrs. Pierce? It's certainly grand. Oh, I wish I'd known you. If she wasn't careful, she'd start grieving for Mrs. Pierce, along with everything else. She picked up a crystal perfume bottle with a blue tasseled atomizer, and sniffed. Rose, with a back note of jonquil and jasmine that made her tingle with desire to spray a mist of it into the centre of the blueness and walk through the essence of it to the door. She resisted. The scent would betray her. Janice would hound her with questions as soon as she got a whiff of it and wheedle at her to see the room. And Edie. No. For the time being, the blue-painted room would be a secret between herself and Mrs. Pierce. Besides,
It might not be a room for lovemaking. Or would it? She closed her eyes, trying to imagine Janice languidly stretched on the brocade bed, like a figure in a painting. With a last look around the room before she returned it to darkness, she was filled with an unfamiliar desire to have her own room. A place she could paint blue, like that. A place she could make sacred, like that. For herself. There were days when the spring equinox wind blew in all directions. Muriel was having its alternator repaired or replaced, and they had walked home from the bus stop, struggling to hold the strings of boxes filled with hats and linings and trims for Ruby to finish by the end of the weekend. "I hope Muriel gets fixed soon." Janice's words were almost snatched away by the wind.
"We've got letters,"
cried Edie, peering into the letterbox. "You leave that alone," Ruby caught up with her. "Who said you could stick your nose into people's letterboxes?"
"Hardly people's," said Janice.
"It's manners, Jan. Letterboxes are private."
"Honestly, Ruby, sometimes you're so square you verge on Victorian."
Janice pushed past her and put an arm around Edie. "Come on, love. Let's get in and put the kettle on." Ruby had half a mind to tell Janice to go and find a magazine with an article about good manners and bloody well read it. With her teeth clenched, she pulled the mail out of the letterbox. A damaged picture postcard from Nairobi was addressed to Mrs. R. Pierce, postmarked June 1953. No return address. There had been newspaper reports of trouble over there. Ruby spared a thought for the sender. That could go behind Mrs. Pierce's photograph. She turned over a long cream envelope, and her heart missed a beat. Mrs. Douglas W. Woods. On the lower corner, the legend Peterson, Sanderson, and Wick. Solicitors. She glanced at the window to check that Janice or Edie weren't watching and quickly crushed the envelope into her pocket. Opening it could wait. Ever since Mr. Peterson had told her to look after the place under the same terms she'd agreed with Frank, the house had become a home. On the day of the funeral, Mr. Peterson had said 3 months. That had passed. Ruby had calculated what the rent might be under normal circumstances, and each week she'd put money from her wages into the post office savings bank, there for when Mr. Peterson demanded it. Janice had been circling advertisements in the paper each night. Affordable old houses to share with other girls near the centre of town. Former grand houses turned into flats. Boarding houses. Accommodation above a shop. Ruby found objections to all of them. It only made the dread that gnawed away at her even worse. Everything that had driven Douglas away from the house was what made her want to stay. Now, she didn't want to see what Mr. Peterson's letter said. The letter could be opened in the weekend, when she had time to herself, when she'd finished the box of work for Madame Chiponia Hoja.
"Will we still be here when it's my birthday?"
Edie used her knife to push a dollop of butter into the middle of her hot toast. "November's a while off," Ruby said, lifting the 3 boiled eggs out of the saucepan. "Don't worry about that now." Mr. Peterson's unopened letter remained hidden in the pocket of her coat. She couldn't face opening it.
"I'm not worried,"
said Edie, smearing the butter back and forth. "Good," said Ruby. "Butter your toast properly, for goodness sake. If you don't butter to the edges, you'll be complaining the crusts are dry." A ripple of tension crossed Ruby's shoulders when Janice came to the kitchen table, yawning.
"Oh, it's a bit early on a Saturday morning for a lecture, isn't it?"
"Mind your own business, Jan," said Ruby.
I'm not having bread wasted.
If Edie doesn't want her crusts, I'll eat them, said Janice.
I'll save them for you, said Edie.
No, you won't, Ruby said. And I don't need you interfering, Janice. She will eat them herself.
She's the cat's mother,
Edie said. Ruby snapped. Do you want a smack? Honestly, said Janice. You sound like Beryl. What's eating you? This house is getting as bad as my place. I'm not surprised, said Ruby. The way you leave your magazines lying about everywhere. And why are your stockings still on the rail? Anyway, you can always go back there. She looked at the wedged slice she'd cut off the loaf. Damn, I've ruined the bread now.
Why are you being so nasty?
Edie gave the table a shove that tipped the egg cup over. The boiled egg rolled toward the edge and hit the floor as she stomped out of the room. Go on, said Janice. Sort it out. I'll mind the toast. How could she bring herself to explain her mood? It was too complicated. Perhaps Janice might assume she had her monthly visitor. What if the letter wasn't opened? Would Mr. Peterson write another? What if it said she had an appointment at his office and she'd missed it? He'd think she was rude. What if it gave her an eviction date? Had she run out of time? She could say the first one must have got lost in the post. Unlikely. This wasn't the slums where you could never count on anything. There was nothing for it. She would have to look at the letter. Later.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.